Good morning. It's 11 minutes before the hour. You're listening to Raven Radio, KCAW in Sitka, where it is 47 degrees and raining today. It's Wednesday, September 28th, 2011. I'm Robert Woolsey with Raven News. Three executives from Sea Alaska Corporation spent more than 2 hours in front of the Sitka Assembly last night, taking questions from assembly members and citizens. The discussion surrounded the Regional Native Corporation's controversial land selection legislation, as well as separate plans to select land around Redoubt Falls, a popular subsistence fishing location south of Sitka. KCAW's Ed Ronco has highlights.
Mayor Cheryl Westover allowed members of the public 1 minute apiece to ask questions of Sea Alaska executives Rick Harris, Jaylene Arujo, and Russell Dick.
We'll give them time to respond, and we'll go that way. And please be polite and courteous.
A gentle admonition before discussion of a topic that's been known to test tempers in Sitka. Two pieces of federal legislation that would grant thousands of acres of land to Sea Alaska, coupled with the Regional Native Corporation's separate and much older selection of 11 acres near Redoubt Falls. Those who asked questions of the company officials had two main ideas on their mind. What is Sea Alaska going to do with the land it obtains? And when it comes to popular subsistence fishing sites like Redoubt...
Can you tell me yes or no, will I be allowed access, free access as it is currently, to the site that I subsistently harvest fish?
Sitka resident Ryan Kaufman there, first up with a question that was repeated throughout the night. If Sea Alaska owns the lands around Redoubt, will subsistence fishermen still have access to do their fishing? Jaylene Arujo is vice president and general counsel for Sea Alaska. She says subsistence does occur on private property in addition to public land.
Our intention is to ensure that there's no difference beyond, you know, from the current use of the site. And we'll do everything within our power to make sure that happens as long as the site is not negatively impacted.
If the level of use is maintained at its current levels and doesn't grow into something that harms the property, Arujo says she doesn't see any change occurring. Other questioners were more pointed, like Davey Lubin, who questioned a map Sea Alaska distributed at the meeting showing a few dots representing sites it plans to select. Lubin says there are at least 25 sites in the House version of the land selection legislation.
S-730, the Senate bill, companion bill, it could be hundreds. Who knows? They're not even listed. And you mentioned you want to get beyond timber. And I'm wondering, is that why you're choosing 70,000 or so acres of high-class old-growth trees on and around Prince of Wales Island?
Lubin went on to ask a few more questions in his minute, including why Sea Alaska wants to select lands outside the original boundaries in the 1971 legislation that entitles them to their selections. Rick Harris is Executive Vice President for Sea Alaska.
We accepted those boxes at the time, but our selection choice without going into those boxes was mountaintops. Top of Baranoff, top of Wrangell St. Elias, which is now Monument Wilderness. Those were the kinds of things that were available for us to select.
Lubin also asked why the organized village of Cake, the recognized tribal government in that community, came out with resolutions opposing the legislation. Arujo says the tribal government believes that the sacred sites Sea Alaska wants to own should be under tribal control.
We actually, as a corporation, would support tribal ownership of sites, but right now there's no means to put land into tribal ownership that could be in trust to keep it protected.
She said the legislation that would convey it to Sea Alaska, on the other hand, would put it into perpetual native ownership. Just fewer than half of the members of the public who spoke did so in support of Sea Alaska's efforts. Many of them, like Harriet Miyasato Belial, said Sea Alaska will own only a small percentage of the land, and she says it shouldn't have taken 40 years of negotiations for that small percentage.
What are we trying to explain to you? Because why should we? I don't know why we need to explain, because we were the Aboriginal people. And like I said, you know, the government will take with one hand and give it to you with one hand and take it back with the other hand and give you double talk.
Back in May, assembly members were considering a resolution to oppose Sea Alaska's land selections, both the federal bills and the readout selection. Sea Alaska, as it turned out, was having a shareholder meeting in the next room the night the assembly met. After lengthy testimony that night, the assembly softened its language, expressing concern instead of opposition, and both sides agreed to have a longer conversation in the future. And that's how last night's discussion came about. Rick Harris said the corporation didn't communicate more with the city because it felt nothing had really changed with the legislation since the last time the two entities spoke. He apologized for not having more dialogue with city leaders. The Sea Alaska representative spent some time before the assembly talking about their initiatives in a lot of surrounding communities, for example, Cake, where Sea Alaska's revitalization of a fish plant has brought a couple dozen jobs to the community. Russell Dick is president and CEO of Ha'ani, the land management arm of Sea Alaska. He says the company's goal is to meet economic needs in communities where its shareholders live by getting people started with their own business ventures.
The last thing we want to do, or the last thing I want to do, is walk into one of our rural communities and say, Sea Alaska's here, we're going to solve your problems, here's what you need to do. Because that isn't going to work long term, that's not sustainable for us.
Assemblymember Larry Cruz said the company's work in Angoon and Cake was good, but that those predominantly native communities were a different environment than Sitka. Later, Terry Blake said he sees a new generation of native leaders, and he wondered how Sitkins could be reassured that Sea Alaska and the community are on the same team. Dick addressed both notions.
Ethnicity is an issue, yeah, maybe much easier in Cake and Angoon, maybe more difficult here, but that doesn't mean that we don't sit down and try, right? And I think there are a lot of opportunities here, and, you know, I don't know if it's a generational thing, but I think you're right. It's an opportunity to come sit down with people and just say, look, things may be different now. You know, it's not the same as it was 40 years ago. But let's sit down and figure out a way to make this work for everybody.
At public meetings in March of 2010 and again in May of this year, people gave impassioned testimony for and against the measures. Recent action on Sea Alaska's readout selection, which was first filed in the 70s, has also provoked strong feelings from people on both sides of the issue. Whether Tuesday night's discussion was a step toward any compromise or agreement or even understanding is hard to determine. But it was decidedly calmer than conversations held in the past. Sea Alaska's executives say they'll keep in contact with city leaders and will hope to talk again when they return for a Tongass Futures Roundtable gathering in Sitka early next month. Reporting in Sitka, I'm Ed Ronco.
Last night's conversation spanned more than 2 hours and covered a lot of ground. There were more points made and more questions asked than any one news story can encompass. We'll post the full audio from last night's conversation with Sea Alaska on our website, kcaw.org, later this afternoon. One of the country's major foundations involved in disarmament advocacy believes the United States should dismantle its nuclear arsenal for the sake of the economy. Paul Carroll, the program director for the San Francisco-based Plowshares Fund, was in Sitka this week to convince Alaskans that spending $50 billion a year maintaining Cold War-era weaponry no longer makes sense, either for national defense or for the national budget. He stopped by the Cable House to discuss the issues.
The U.S. has a military capacity and sophistication far beyond any threat from a nation state that you could think of. We spend more than the next 15 nations combined, and of those 15 nations, about 12 of them are our allies. So not only would I submit that conventional deterrence is sufficient, but the strategic nuclear deterrent used to be aimed at the Soviet Union. We don't have any kind of a threat or a nation state out there today that our nuclear weapons are actually deterring. You're not going to deter the Taliban or Al-Qaeda with a nuclear weapon. So there are two fundamental shifts. One is the fact that we can deter traditional threats by conventional means, and you can't deter what the actual threats today are with nuclear means.
You hear so much about America's prestige or loss of prestige, and isn't a nuclear arsenal wrapped up in that? I mean, aren't we conceding something in the eyes of a large segment of the population when we give up, you know, the thing that we've been best at since the end of World War II?
I can understand that that psychology. I think what's important to understand are a couple of things. The world nuclear arsenal, the number of weapons that exist in the world today is around 20,000. 20,000 nuclear weapons. Between Russia and the United States, we own about 96% of that. We were the first to develop them. We were the first and, in fact, only country to ever use them in war. And yes, we were the first. We had the largest arsenal. We have the most accurate missiles. But if the idea of deterrence is to never use these, it's sort of a false ego, if you will. I would suggest that now where we really should be taking pride is in leading the world in managing these risks. There are hundreds of tons of nuclear materials out there in the former Soviet Union that present a risk to us. And the United States is leading on that front. We hosted a nuclear security summit a year and a half ago. There's going to be another one next year in Asia. We've got plenty of other things we can take pride in. And I would suggest that one of those things is, you know, we started this. Now, it was a very different situation. It was World War II. There was an imperative. But we ought to be the ones to lead the world out of the nuclear abyss.
Paul Carroll is the program director for the Plowshares Fund, a public foundation advocating nuclear disarmament. He spoke at Kettleson Library last night in Sitka. Extended audio of this interview is available online at our website, kcaw.org. Preliminary figures indicate that Alaska saw fewer cruise ship passengers this year. The president of the Alaska Cruise Association, John Binkley, says an estimated 870,000 passengers took cruises to Alaska this summer. That compares to 878,000 last year. Binkley says nearly 950,000 passengers are expected next summer. Zone weather forecast for Sitka and Port Alexander today calls for showers. Isolated thunderstorms this morning, highs around 51. South winds 10 to 20 miles per hour. You are listening to Raven Radio, KCAW, in Sitka.